Okay, this is April the 14th, and it's 1984, and I am at Mary Creighton's with Pete on the phone and Jim doing the dishes, and we're going to record. Mary. Well, I've already said on the tape that I'm here with you, Mary, and so you're going to tell me some things about when you first met Mother.
Jackie, I met your, what was your first maiden name?
Dogan.
No.
Vera Wardner.
Yes.
Oh, kitty cat. Don't bite my foot.
No.
She
does your stick.
Oh, my.
Oh.
She's attacking me. I've got a cat just like that. A great attacker.
She's afraid of strangers or something.
No, she's not at all afraid. She attacked me.
She's mean. Yeah. She's had her claws taken off, and Jackie, I did not meet you at Galesburg. I was fortunate when I was a freshman. I was a freshman at Knox. My girlfriend had a young man very much in love with her who came to Park.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Barton, and his sister came to see him to see how he was doing. Alex, we were all freshmen. And his sister asked me a question. What are you going to do? What would you like to do when you graduate? And I said something that I thought would please her, because the daughter of W.E. Barton.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something I thought about, but not too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do settlement work.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, if you're serious to do settlement work, I could get you a job. And so, as a result, she said, let me talk to your mother. And that took place. My mother told me her father, W.E. Barton, was a member of the board of the Association House, 150 West North Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that they, young students, have time to care for the children in the Bible school, summer Bible school, and on the playground, and in a nursery that was next to the Association House.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came to pass that I found myself going at the age of 18 for the first time. Never had been to the big city before. And as we approached Chicago, I remember how the United trades that I saw in the distance fascinated me. And when I got at the station by Helen and taken to the Barton home for a conversation with very serious W.E. Barton. And I am impressed with my sincerity and to do settlement work. And so he said that the next day his daughter would take me to the association and introduce me there. Well, 2150 the next day, West North Avenue. I was taken in and introduced to the manager, whom I remember as a Miss Wilson. Her name is correct. And said, I'll show you your room. you are going to have a roommate.
Mm-hmm.
I was hear that news, and I think I had to wait till the next day. A very pretty young girl, a year younger than 17 to my 18.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, I was introduced to her. And us were outgoing people, immediately liked each other. Wasn't any awkwardness and anything equated.
Mm-hmm.
In 10 minutes, we're friends.
And you've been good friends all your lives.
Yes. Yes, I've been good friends all my life. She is the type of person who, I'm not fortunate. She's the type of person who never forgets. I think I'm that type too.
Mm-hmm.
But Vera, was a Chicago girl. She was born in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
She had a sister and a brother. And she had a mother I was a country girl, and I had to be taught how to drop the nickel in the slot to rock elevated. I had to learn a lot of things about school, and Vera was a marvelous teacher. She knew Chicago. She knew its ways. And so we would take walks in the neighborhood of West North Avenue, which were very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To me. And then we were assigned to teach in the summer Bible school. And Vera could play piano, which I could not. But I could help teach the songs that I had learned in kindergarten from my Sunday school days.
Mm-hmm.
And we got along famously in Bible school. It was quite a thriving school. And then they told us that we people whom they needed to look after the playground after all these afternoons and early evenings. Down in the playground, we found wonderful swings. The first thing that attracted us were wonderful swings and wide seated boards. And the first thing we did being playground was to get into one of those swings and work as high as we could. And we fascinated the children. The few that were there then, they thought teachers were something. Vera and I would also enjoy the times when the children would be invited to Lake Front by some of the wealthy people who lived on the lake shore. They would invite children from the West Avenue district, and we would take as the chosen few or the chosen many, as many we could take in two or three cars.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd spend most of the day then on the beach lake forest, which was a quite remarkable adventure for a Galesburg girl. And it was in league with my partner, with Vera, we could easily get a habit of teaching the children to be careful or to play simple games and not to get hurt. I think we were considered quite successful in our positions.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing about summer a very hot summer. And West North Avenue Association House had a roof. And for some time, some of the workers had used in the very, very hot nights, slept on the cots on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine Vera and I sleeping up on the roof, stars above Chicago?
Sounds like fun.
And talking uh-huh. and getting acquainted. I, a country girl from Little Galesburg, and Sarah from Chicago. Many interesting experiences, and I told her my past, and she told me her past.
After that summer, then did you go back to us?
And one of the things that, yes, next year I came back, and mm-hmm. Vera was with me.
She was
and, yes.
Do you recall any incidents besides the sleeping up on the roof swinging?
I was going to say, I just had them and then I forgot.
Had mother?
Oh, this was a great incident in my life. I had graduated when I came to the Association House, and Vera was a senior at Carl Schultz High School.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a certain group of interesting friends at Carl Schultz. And she invited me to go out with her to Carl Schultz and meet her friends. Mm-hmm. And that was a great thrill to meet a whole group of city girls. And I realized that Vera was the star of the group. She was very highly regarded. She had a talent that fascinated them and everyone who knew could see her dance, because Vera's really a born dancer. She was likened later by John Grimes, who had a picture to Degas.
The Degas painting.
Yeah, she had the grace of a true professional, in spite of the fact that she had accidents in childhood, which made her have a crush of the spine. She ignored it entirely and danced. Was famous, became almost famous as a dancer. Occasionally, the Association House would have little entertainments, invite in the neighborhood, and always Vera was a star as she danced. And then it was nice when Vera was, Vera's mother would allow her go home with me to Galesburg, and she met my family, and she had a taste of Main Street.
What sort of accident did that have to her back? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know. I don't know. Not too bad. I'm sure she would have told me. I think perhaps she was born with it.
I thought maybe she had scoliosis.
She still has a curvature, hasn't she?
Oh yeah, and it's gotten worse because she's lost the musculature that held it in place. But I thought maybe she had scoliosis and just had not had the braces, the things like that. But that it might have.
Well, she was so courageous, and she was so enjoying herself. She was enjoying her God-given talent to be a very awful toe dancer. That she forgot it, and she made everybody else forget it.
Well, it certainly wasn't noticeable.
No, it wasn't noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And she never spoke of it or complained of it.
Well, and how many summers did you come back?
I came back the second summer because to prove that I'd made good. I came back the second summer, and Vera and I were roommates again and the best of friends. And I also got a place on the staff for an older friend of mine in Galesburg who played the piano and was in a very ragtime fashion, and she was an addition to the entertainment mm-hmm. that we put on. Vera Dancing and my friend Harriet, who had a nickname called Beanie, she was a natural ragtime player, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd sing. And I can remember the song that we liked best is something about way down south in Indiana. I sometimes those words come back. But we'd say Beanie had a whole list of songs that she had made up herself, humorous songs, and we all learned them. They were foolish things, but how much we did enjoy being foolish.
Do you remember any of those foolish songs?
Yes, I remember. I'm the most unlucky man that ever you did see. Misfortune is the only girl that ever followed me. Nearest I get to the wine is only just the cork. And if the sky were raining soup, I know I'd have a fork. Oh, I'm unlucky. I'm unlucky. Oh, I'm the most unlucky man ever you did see. To carry bricks and mortar up a ladder, I did try. I got a job upon a building 20 stories high. And from the seventh story, I fell into the mortar box. And oh, I never was so mortified before. The workmen standing round about, they all fell to fish me out. Oh, I'm unlucky though. I'm the most unlucky man.
I've never heard that one before.
I went to see my best girl on a Sunday night. We sat up in the parlor and the lights were burning bright. But her father thought I stayed too late and down the steps he stole. He kicked me out the window with his all gun leather soul. Oh, I'm unlucky. I'm a very unlucky man. In all the world, there never was such an unlucky man. That was a sample of Harriet Larson's homemade Galesburg made songs,
uh-huh.
and that they all had great deal of rhythm.
Have you sent any of those into Garrison Keillor on A Prairie Home Companion? Do you listen to that?
What?
You don't listen to Garrison Keillor on Saturday night on the radio?
No, don't listen to the radio. It's just all I listen to. I have something against TV.
Well, listen to the radio tonight. Look up your radio section and see when A Prairie Home Companion comes on. Do you have a radio section there for Saturday?
We'll have TV up. I should have radio. It comes on CBS or NBC.
Well, could you have access to a public radio station?
Oh gosh, everyone got radios all over the place in gyms. Both gyms room. That's a radio and a stereo.
If they broadcast it live, it comes on at 5 o'clock.
Sometimes coming here called it the hobo, the hobo.
Well, that's not the one I'm talking about. You ought to listen to Garrison Keillor. Mother and Dad listen to Garrison Keillor every Saturday night.
I'd love to find something that I could enjoy. Because,
oh, you would enjoy Garrison Keillor.
See
if there's anything that lists the radio.
Because if there's a game playing, either football or tennis, That's all that anyone could hear, mm-hmm. except I'd have a separate one, but... Well, anyway...
Do you remember any of your other songs?
Well, of course. Can you stand to hear them?
Oh, yeah, I want to hear them.
Well, Vera and I both learned them.
But she hasn't sung me that one about the unlucky man.
Oh. The popular college man. Oh, the popular college man. Oh, let's see if I can. Popular college man. Every girl he will sigh. The popular college man. That's it. Every girl he will sigh when she sees him walk by. He's the only man for me. Popular college man. Now, that's just a little jot from it, from another one, but it had a real rhythm, had mm-hmm. a terrific rhythm. Popular college man.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there was a very sweet song that make everybody cry. I like to go to Billy's house. He lives next door to me. He's got the nicest something there ever you did see. Tain't no dog, tain't no cat, tain't no baby brother. It's a lady there with pretty hair, and Billy calls her mother. I remember once she scratched his knee. He hurt it all up bad. She kissed the soreness all away and called him precious lad. Oh, I'd like to go to Billy's house. Don't know the reason other, but maybe it's just because I wished I had a mother.
Hmm.
And everybody would cry. But isn't that funny? I can remember it. I don't sell it. Sing these all around. Pete never heard of it.
Well, Mother is fishing these things up and singing them to me and telling them to me, and I'm always glad to hear them. She works on the words, and pretty soon she remembers them all.
Oh, Bernie, we called Harriet Beanie, and Beanie was a great addition to us. The children loved us. They just crowd around us when we have a sing song. And I'm going to try to remember any others, but there were others.
Well, tell me about what would come next, when Dad came into the picture, Ron?
Oh, no, your mother, when I didn't come, the third summer, I went to California because I want to tell you how very much I enjoyed meeting the Carl Schurz group,
mm-hmm.
High schools. And then Vera, your mother was graduating, and she introduced me to everybody and to her teachers, and it was a very interesting chapter in my life. Just to be able to know people at the Carl Schurz High School, and then to meet with them when a certain group of girls to which Vera belonged, very introduced me, and we would get together, and then of people of all, Vera will want me never to remember, forget to tell you that the chief entertainer, besides Vera's dancing, which was always admired, was Molly Newman, and a member of this group, because Molly could sit down at the piano and play, and she could take a broomstick and do a dance, a broomstick dance. She could entertain us in beautifully. And she would invite Vera and me to her home out in Ravenswood. And it was the first time I had ever been in a real Jewish home. I don't know. But they were so cordial, and they were so generous, and they had such a welcome for us that Molly became a really very close friend of both Vera's and mine. And she was a friend of mine until she died too. And she, Molly went to the Chicago University and married John Grimes. And Vera for some years, Vera and I parted ways. I know we always tried to know where the other was, but it wasn't always possible. I had an ambition to do newspaper work in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
And Vera had obtained a position as secretary to the granddaughter of General Booth, Victoria Booth Clifford. And it was a delightful experience for me to be taken by Vera to the large home of the Booth Clifords in Chicago and meet Victoria. And Victoria's very interesting mother, and get a little insight about how this what the Booth Clifords were doing, first in London, you know, first in England, and still in England,
mm-hmm.
but then in the United States, and all the Salvation Armies that dot our country are all direct descendants from General Booth.
Mm-hmm.
But Vera had this beautiful Victoria Booth Clifford. She was beautiful, and Victoria Booth would entertain. Is that the right word? She would hold meetings, and give little sermons.
Yeah, she was an evangelist.
She was an evangelist. Excuse me. That was exactly what she was an excellent evangelist, and she really converted Vera. And Vera was very loyal to her, and she never had had a secretary, I'm sure, with the talents and the charm and of Vera Wardner. And so Vera stayed with her year after year and went to London with her. In the meantime, I was in Chicago working to get on a newspaper and getting on one. And what you might say, working very hard to fulfill my own ambitions for myself. I wanted to work on a big city newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Even when my college professor offered to get me a job in Springfield, I was scornful. I'm not scornful, but I thought I was big city stuff. I'd been in Chicago, you see, for two summers at the Association House, and the big city had gotten into my blood, and I didn't want to work in a small town. I wanted to work in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
But always I would hear from time to time from Vera, but Vera was having a great adventure, and she could tell you more about that, of course, better than I can.
Mm-hmm.
Except that I know she went to London. It was one of my ambitions to go to London, but I had to live a good many years before I could realize that ambition.
Well, I never knew she went to London. I'll have to ask her about that.
I'm sure she went. I'm sure she did. And one of the young Booth Clifords, the handsome young men, fell in love with her and wanted to marry her.
Theodore.
Yeah, she had a hard time convincing Theodore that that she shouldn't marry him. But then...
Theodore denies that these days.
Does he?
Yep.
Well, she... Vera always tells... Vera tells a fact straight.
That's what I believe.
I always believe it. And she's a good storyteller, and she has a memory. Then she was sent by Victoria, or Victoria's mother, or by the Booth Clibborns. She was sent to Paris to work as a secretary of the Salvation Army, I'm sure.
When she went to France, the only time I know of, that's when she went being sent by the Methodist Church to do reconstruction work after the war. That didn't have anything to do with the Booth Clibborns.
Well, then I'm wrong. I either wasn't told, or else jumped to the conclusion that she was still with Victoria Booth, and that she went to France as a result of her association with General Booth and the big Booths, in London.
She was at the Methodist Memorial there, and that's where she met Dad.
All I know is that she was met when she went to Paris. She wrote me a letter, and she was met at the boat. She was met when she arrived in Paris by a very, very handsome, a man whom she instantly trusted and liked, and he had been sent to meet her because she was new and she didn't know her way around. But
okay, are we recording yet?
Vera,
I guess we're okay. Your mother has been just met at the train, and I'm about to ask Mary, if by any chance Mary has saved any of those letters. Are they in any boxes around anywhere, or have they been long lost?
Oh, they've been every once in a while Jim digs out some letter from downstairs or something. It just amazes me, But no, I can't put my hands on anything from any of those years because I was pursuing a very hard profession. I was in Chicago doing newspaper work, and I must always be grateful. I'm always very proud of the fact that Richard Finnegan gave me my first job. He was a publisher of the little Chicago Journal that didn't really have very many jobs to give people. And he sent me, do you care if I say something about myself?
No, I'm delighted to have anything you'd like to say.
But Richard Finnegan gave me a job and sent me over to what's the biggest building in Chicago? The county building, I suppose.
I don't know.
Great big county building, and told me to. He's the only job I have for you now. Will you take it? I'll take anything. And he said, "Can you type?" I had to tell I had typed a little bit when I was in Knox College on my themes, but I certainly was no typist. But I told a fib. I said, "Oh yes, I can type," and he said, "Well, you go over and go on the seventh floor and ask the man in charge to give you the records of the." Of all of those who failed in the Polish bank last week, I am editorializing against privately owned banks. And this bank, the owner of this bank skipped off with the money from all those poor immigrants out in that part of Chicago. And I am going to publish the names of every depositor who and how much money he lost. And in order to do that, I need somebody to go over to the county building and take the record, find the records, the big, and type them. You see, I wanted so much to please Richard Finnegan.
Mm-hmm.
He had printed, I had written a little poem or two, and he'd printed them for me, and I got when he gave me the great books, great heavy books, and put them before me, and he said, Mr. Vanderpool is a member of my staff, and he will introduce you and help you find a good typewriter over there. And, you know, there the reporters on a certain part of the body building just worked on any typewriter they can find. And he did so, or else he obtained a typewriter that I could handle as best I could. And I started, and he showed me the page, and it was a Polish bank, and everyone who deposited it had a long Polish name and a long Polish address.
And so you didn't have the Wilsons and the Taylors that would have been easy.
Didn't have any Andersons, Petersons, Olsons, like Gillsburg.
Yeah.
And I did the best. So I started. I said, what time do you open in the morning? And they said, 7 o'clock. I said, I'll be here. I would be there at 7 o'clock. And they don't. And then at noon, I say, I can't leave. I can't afford to take an hour off for lunch. Would somebody please bring me a sandwich? And somebody would. And then I was found trying my best to type those Polish names by a reporter who was reporting upstairs. He was reporting in Judge Landis's court. And he would get through about 3 o'clock or 3:30 every afternoon, through for the day. And when he discovered that my really was a predicament, he came down and would take it over and finish up my page so that I would have enough names to take over to my editor,
mm-hmm.
Richard Finnegan. And Richard Finnegan would say, that's fine for today, now bring me another column tomorrow.
Hmm.
Now, all this time, where was Vera? Vera was out of my life then. I was given a room, rented a room in Molly Newman's home.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Vera would write to Molly, and then we'd get her address, but we were both working our own destinies in life, our own life. We were doing the best we could. But she was working hard for Victoria Bush Thibbert, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, when did Mother re-enter?
And then Mother re-entered my life years later when she she received a letter from me, and it told her that I was an assistant editor at the Dowagiac Daily News, and that I had married a newspaper man, and that he was editor. And the Wyzak, Michigan is a little town. And your mother cared enough to have Ron Driver. She must have been, I'm sure she was married by that time, but she walked in the office with the Wyzak Daily News. And can you imagine how happy I was to see her?
Mm.
I'd been working in a little town because after the war, after the First World War, there were very few jobs. And the man I'd married had lost his job in Chicago, so he had to take whatever he could get. And all he could get was editorship of the Wyzak Daily News. So we lived there for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Vera found me there. Wasn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, we began to write to each other. But I went on to I went on in newspaper work and went on to New York and I don't, well, I have to say that I did. I got a job in Chicago, finally, of the Chicago News Bureau, City News Bureau. Did you ever hear of it?
No, but that doesn't mean anything.
And to show you, I was still a country girl, the Chicago News Bureau. I got it because I asked Richard Finnegan, please, if you haven't got another real job for me, please recommend me for some other to the Chicago News Bureau, because I'm told by the man who's been helping me type names that's a good place to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Finnegan said, well, you go tell him to call me and I'll tell him about you. So I went over to the Chicago News Bureau. And it was just a man named Brown, and he said, well, the war is taking all my men. You see, there's the First World War, and I've got to begin to hire girls. And I hate to do it because I'm a kind of a rough talker, and I don't use good proper English, and if I hired you, it would embarrass me. But anyway, I said it was my whole life ambition was just to do newspaper work, and that I wouldn't be offended. I would if he wanted to use bad language, I'd just shut my ears. Anyway, I talked to him, and he said, well, I'll only hire you on one condition, if you can answer questions. And I said, what is that? Have you ever read Sentimental Tommy? And I said, yes. Who wrote it? I said, Barry. Oh, Tommy wanted to do newspaper work, and he had to find, and he couldn't find the proper word to describe the meeting at the Kirk. He's Scott up in Scotland. And he said, tell me what word was it that, if you could tell me what word he found to describe the those who attended this meeting, I'll give you this job. And I know you can't. I said, the word was gathering. Tommy didn't want to say it was a small crowd, and he couldn't say it was a large crowd. So he just said it was a gathering. Well, he said, I have to hire you.
That's a wonderful story.
Oh, isn't it? I wish there was some Vera in it.
That's okay. It's a wonderful story all by itself. We'll get some with Vera in it later.
Well, then I worked then, and I went. He assigned me to Children's Court, and that was interesting. And I brought it. You see, the City News Bureau gathers stories that the other newspapers miss and sells them to the big papers. and that's why they have their own reporters out gathering up stories that the Tribune and the other the big papers, used to be the Chicago Daily News, you know, used to be, there were five or six good papers, the Herald, the Chicago Herald, and they would all buy stories from the City News Bureau if they had missed them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought him in several small stories, and then he gave me a slip of paper one day, and to tell an assignment, and I looked at the word, and I didn't understand it, and I thought, I wonder what it means. I looked around to see if I knew anybody I could ask what that word meant, but I didn't see anybody that I knew. So I ran. I had to get there. I had to get to the terrible place, to a police court, to the West Clark Street or awful police court, North Clark Street Police Court. It was notorious. It's worse now than it was then. It wasn't actually dangerous, but today a woman wouldn't dare go down there, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But this was way back in 1918, and I grabbed a streetcar, and I got down to the police court. I kept standing at a piece of paper. I decided that it meant people who steal money, people who take money from other people. I can't remember what word I'm trying to remember what word I thought it meant. I decided that it meant, didn't I? But what?
Extortion.
Yes, I decided it meant extortion. Extortion. There, that's what it means.
And was that what it meant?
Well, no.
Okay, the story goes on.
But I got to the police court, and I went in, and the dirty old police court. It was dirty then, I'll bet it's worse now. And I saw a group of people hovered around a judge, sort of a judge, not a, and I went over and stood with them, and a florid young woman, not of the type of Vera's friends or my friends, was testifying, and I listened to the questions that the lawyer was asking her, and pretty soon I realized I couldn't stay there, and so I turned around and just quietly left the court.
But was she a prostitute?
Yes, and I realized that the word was abortion, but I got out in the hallway of the police station. I left the room, and when I got out in the hallway, I began to break down. And so I leaned against the wall, and I remembered, I don't think I remember, I remember the tears just seemed to spurt way out of them. And then I heard a door open at the end of the corridor, and I saw a policeman, and I quickly dashed into a telephone booth so he wouldn't see me. But when I got, then I ran out, buttoned up my coat, ran out, grabbed a streetcar, and got back to my office. When I got up to my, got back to the office where he had hired me, when he didn't want girls anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got up there, he said, "You were," he said, accusingly, "You were seen crying in the Clark Street police station." And I told you when you came that you were too young and too green, and I won't have a nice girl in this office who doesn't know what abortion means and cries in a police station. And I was fired.
So you were fired?
And I was crying. And I went down the steps crying, and there was a great big snowstorm. I've never since seen such big snowflakes. And I walked down West Madison Street because I walked down towards my old boss, Richard Finnegan. I walked down that direction, and I met a newspaper girl that I'd met on one of my assignments. And I said, I've been fired. And she said, don't you care, don't you care, don't you dare cry. She said, there's all kinds of jobs in this town. She said, look just across the street, she said. She pointed to the Hearst building. She said, there's a Myrtle Elsinore. And she's been a girl reporter for the Chicago American. And she went on, she was, the man she wanted to marry was assigned to a camp, and she's followed him off, and she's left him, and they're looking for a girl reporter. Go over there and get that job. So I walked over, and sure enough, they said, are you the girl? What is your name? And I told them, Mary Allendrick. Are you the girl that Mr. Brown just fired for not knowing what abortion meant? I said, yes, yes, sir. Well, we need a girl reporter. We just lost our girl reporter. Our girl reporter doesn't need to know what bad words, what those words mean. We want a girl reporter. The younger you are, and the better we like it. She said, will you go to Evanston and be our girl reporter from Evanston? I said, yes. And then I called Molly and told Molly I was staying with Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to Evanston, so she packed my little grip for me and met me and went out with me and helped me find a place to live in Evanston. And I was a girl reporter for the New York, Chicago American for quite a while. And now where have I met Vera? Now where did I meet? I didn't meet Vera until after I did well. They gave me another job in addition to girl reporter, so that I made $25 a week, big stuff.
Wow.
And then I was given 2 weeks vacation, and by that time the newspaper man who would help me, remember, up in the county building,
mm-hmm.
he was taking me out to dinner as often as almost every night,
mm-hmm.
saving me money, feeding me well, but he was going in the army, and so I had to take him to the station and say goodbye. He was going. He had enlisted in the sea as a seaman. But when he got to New York, he wrote to me and told me that when you have a vacation, you come to New York and I'll get you a job. I hope to get a job here. So that's what happened. That's what happened. I got a vacation with pay for 2 weeks. That was wonderful. For not working longer than 6 months. That's all I'd worked. And when I got out to New York, you go by way of Albany, and he met me at Albany, and he's pretty uniform, and he said, I want to marry you, and then we'll go to New York together.
And was that Creighton?
That was Creighton. And we went to a farmer, and his wife used to rent in the summertime, the nicest people you ever met, and so we stayed there for several days to talk it over and think about it, and Mrs. Cleveland said to me, well, she, they had me sleep in the room right next to theirs. They really took good care of me. He said, well, this is, if he seems like a very fine young man. He says, but you'll be sorry if you do, Bobby, but you'll be sorry if you don't, too. And it was wartime.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to have to leave right away to take a trip on the ship. And so we had to get married right away. Mr. Cleveland and Mrs. Cleveland were good members of a little neighborhood church called the Brainerd Presbyterian Church. I thought it was Presbyterian. Turned out to be Methodist later. And so anyway, she gave us a wedding breakfast and we were married and went to New York. Went to New York on the we went to New York on the Hudson River boat. Wasn't that exciting for a Gilbert girl?
Yeah, a honeymoon trip down the Hudson.
Yeah, down the Hudson
to New York.
And then the next day, the man I married had to go back to his ship, and he was slated to take a trip that would might keep him away 3 weeks. And I found myself a room first at the YWCA, and then I had to get a job in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But all this time Vera didn't know where I was,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know where Vera was. But I had worked in Chicago, you see, successfully, so I had a press card. And so I tried every paper first, as I thought I'd want to work for Hearst paper. But the largest paper in New York, the largest one was the Hearst paper. And I finally went there because I couldn't get past the office boys in the other places.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, what experience have you had? And they, I couldn't get in to see the editor. And so then I finally went to the New York American. Then I had a press card, the Chicago American. And then I told a fib. I said the editor of the Chicago American has sent me with a message to the editor of
mm-hmm.
the... And
they hired you?
He hired me. He didn't even ask me what the message was. He knew that was a fib.
Uh-huh.
The newspaper people are smart. And he just said, have you got any clippings of your work? And he handed them over to his editor. He was the editor-in-chief. And they looked through clippings. They sat there, made me sit in the chair while they read them. And then he said, come back at 1 o'clock and go to work.
Well, good.
I had a job in New York.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you stay in New York?
I stayed in New York until my brother... One of my brothers was killed in the army camp. He came to see me in New York, and he was a brother only 6 years older than I. That we'd been very close. We'd gone. Actually, we were in college together because he had to stay out to work
mm-hmm.
and earn money. So we were. And he said, oh, sister, you have a wonderful job. He was so proud of me to think I had a job on a big newspaper. And I loved it. I reported a party at the Rockefellers.
Hmm.
They gave me wonderful assignments. They were very good to me. I was 23. I was still very young. I mean, in their eyes. And but when then finally time passed anyway, but I had to go home. I had to go home the minute my husband came back, and we lived together in Greenwich Village, just like a storybook.
Mm-hmm.
And I and I became ill, and I had done a story for a little woman doctor about she had given a baby for adoption to a couple, and they brought the baby back and said it was part Negro and they couldn't keep it. So she asked me to write a story about it and help her get a home for that baby. And I put my whole heart in that story. We called the baby, and I got a raise and a $10 reward from Ms. Rub W.R. that William Randolph Hearst gave the large sum of $10 every week to the story he liked best.
Mm-hmm.
I got that prize, and I got a raise, and she found so many homes for so many babies, said she had to visit every orphanage in town to find part white, part colored people, babies.
That she could give to those people, huh?
Mm-hmm. So then...
Well, think of how many little children then got a home on account of your story.
That's what my newspaper man said. They had it on the front page, you know. They really played it up. And then I became ill. And I didn't know any other doctor except this woman doctor for whom I'd written a story. So I walked away. So I took it underground or way out there to Dr. Mary Alton and told her I thought I had ptomaine poison. And she said, no, she said, you're pregnant. She says, you don't want a baby, do you? I said, yeah, I certainly do. She said, are you? Don't be crazy. You've got a good job. You've got talent. You wrote me a wonderful story. I said, that doesn't make any difference. I do want a baby. I've been praying for a baby. I've been married a year and I haven't had a baby. So I tried to work, and I found that you can't work. You can't always work. You've had babies, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can work. Sometimes I couldn't work. I got very weak. So I had to give up my job and go home. And now where did I meet Vera? After I got home, Vera contacted me. And I don't know where she was then, but wherever she was, she told me she'd married a wonderful man and so forth. And then it wasn't long until we kept writing to each other. And I went up to visit Vera and Ron at the farm.
What do you remember about your first meeting of Ron and of the farm? W.J., go on with Ron first.
Yes, well, I met Ron. I thought he was the most handsome, one, a very, very handsome man. And I always remember a good story Vera said when Victoria Booth Clyburn came to see her. You see, Vera never lost track of anybody if she could help it. You know, somebody mm-hmm. whom she'd once loved. And Victoria Booth Clyburn had been to see her, and Vera told me a story. She said, well, Vera, you landed on your feet. Isn't that cute?
Uh-huh.
Did she ever tell you that?
No.
Well, I couldn't remember. And Vera said, and Vera brought her mother down, took care of her mother. Her father and mother had been divorced then, and her mother was alone. Her mother was very sweet. She helped Vera take care, had two babies, and she needed some help.